This is Remote Patrol. I'm Jason Hawke. He's Richard Smith, and she's Allison Downing. We're going to talk more about the X-Files tonight because, you know, there's so much to appreciate. For instance, the season 5 episode, The Postmodern Prometheus, which I know Allison especially has been dying to rave about for quite some time now.
I really have.
You've been excited about this. Like last week, I thought that you were going to like just reach through the internet and tear me a new one because we didn't get to the postmodern.
No, I'm not quite that impatient. I can sit on something for a week. So, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I didn't want to, but maybe I will tonight. I don't know. I don't know how I'm feeling.
Well, Lisa and I have been continuing to watch The X-Files, but we're not really quite all the way through season one yet. I've been skipping around when Lisa's not around and watching some that are further down the road, but we still haven't gotten to anything that's quite like this one, not together yet. This one really breaks the template. It does kind of this weird narrative thing. I think that the writers got bored. They started to get a little bit shifty. They were bored with all the purple gels and the dark lighting and the shadows, and they just wanted to do something that was not quite so X-Files-y. They wanted to play around with the format.
I think they wanted to have a great deal of fun, and that certainly came across. I was laughing. What? Yeah, I laughed a couple of times. It was funny.
I think in its later half, like maybe after season 4, where they do really start experimenting, and I spelled that in my notes, experimenting.
X. Did
yes,
you?
X hyphen. Nice. It's not going to come across audibly unless I actually explain the joke, though.
But it's quite weak, then. Never mind. Go on.
They started experimenting with these novel storytelling methods. And I think that this is like one of the three episodes that always comes up whenever you talk about this. There's this one, Jose Chung's From Outer Space, which I've mentioned a bunch of times, and X-Cops, which I only briefly remember. I think that might have been kind of toward the end of where I stopped watching.
Mm. Oh, is that the one where it's an episode of Cops?
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, they play the Cops introduction right at the beginning of the episode.
They do, yeah.
And it's just a single camera following them around, and there's police, and they're in the real world. I don't remember if there's anything actually supernatural or an actual like X-File involved in that episode.
There's something about a monster. There's a monster in it.
But that would ruin it. If they caught it on camera like that, if there were a documentary crew, a Fox crew following them around and getting a monster on camera, that would ruin it.
It would.
The entire premise of the X-Files, which is that you can never really know. There's never really concrete evidence.
Yeah. They don't get it on film, I don't think. It's all right.
There's a couple of other episodes where they do start to play around with the structure. Like one that I can't wait to show Lisa, which is Home. Do you remember that one?
Remind me a bit more.
Home is in season 4, and it's basically a Wes Craven movie that happens to involve Mulder and Scully. They've got the inbred family that keeps their quadriplegic mother under the bed.
Yeah. Yes.
They pull her out to breed.
That's I know that one well. Yeah. I know all of them. It's just a matter of, do you know what? Maybe I think that linking episodes to titles has really only been a thing in the last sort of 5 or 6 years.
Well, X-Files started to do it. It was among the early adopters because right at the top of the screen, they had them every week.
Yeah, I'm not explaining myself well. That's my fault. I understand that TV shows have always had titles. I mean, come on, we can go back to Star Trek, the original series. But in terms of people who are less than obsessive fans about something, knowing the episode's titles... that's what I think is a relatively new thing.
We didn't have access to that information. They didn't tell us. It wasn't in the TV guides, really.
I think it's a Netflix thing.
It's a Netflix thing, and it's a digital TV thing. They've just started doing it a lot more often than they used to.
Yeah.
But it is a fairly recent thing that we've been able to see what the episode was called.
Probably something that started to come more into the cultural consciousness once IMDb launched.
Yeah.
Because there was a way to look it up and reference it and index it and to know it and to share it with other fans.
I think just once you start seeing synopses coupled with episode titles and that sort of thing, and you start to remember, you know, on your on shows you like, rather than shows that you obsess over, but shows you like, you start associating things when you're looking for specific episodes that you remember and that sort of thing. And I think it's just, it just, I just feel like it's becoming a bit more widespread. I just feel like of late people in general are saying episode titles to me and expecting me to know which episode of whatever it is I'm talking about. And that feels like a recent thing. That's a kind of side note. That's not X-Filesy. Sorry.
Well, it probably is pretty recent. I mean, really since the rise of the internet, probably really just since people could talk more about it. It's the TV is a weird thing because there's so much market fragmentation right now. You know, that if you try to find a fan of some of these shows that we become fans of, it's not as easy as back when MASH was on the air. You didn't just go into work the next day and say, you know, did you see last night's episode? Nobody knows what that means anymore because there's so many channels to watch. There's internet.
Yeah, I've had this week, one of my colleagues and I have been watching this show and he's been like, have you seen this week's episode? I'm like, no, I'll watch it tonight. So when I got home from work last night, I put the episode on. Nah, it's the wrong episode. I'm already one in front, so I had to catch up. And I nearly ruined it for him because I didn't know.
There's this weird inverse relationship, though, because the more niche these shows become, I think the more into the minutia we are. I think we're far more willing to learn episode titles for these shows that maybe we're one of just a million fans instead of one of 60 million fans.
Maybe so. Or maybe it's just the nature of fandom anyway and the nature of us as geeky people and what makes us happiest and being a bit nerdy about all of this is part of our purview in life.
I think it's the more legendary stuff that we learn the names of, though. I mean,
the culturally significant stuff.
I've just blasted through season 3 of House of Cards. Couldn't tell you a single episode title, or if it had them.
Oh, I did. They were all named.
You know, I don't remember any of them. We've just watched all of Third Rock from the Sun. We saw the episode title of them. I remember that a lot of them are a play on the word dick.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you what any of them really were and what episode that was.
On the other hand, walk into a room full of fantasy nerds and say Baylor.
Exactly.
And they're immediately going to grimace.
Exactly. There's just, and you know, the Star Trek people are the same. Everyone knows Darmok. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah.
And Jalata Tanagra?
Yeah.
I know them.
When the walls fell.
Exactly. All these bad things happen to those people. The X-Files was a show as well.
Whenever people recite that little mantra, it just makes me so happy. It gives me this warm little feeling down in the pit of my stomach. We belong. We belong to a club.
We're fucking weird, aren't we?
You know what's fucking weird?
What?
The postmodern Prometheus.
It really is.
I tried.
Oh,
I tried.
Oh, my God.
And
they had such a laugh doing this. This is clearly a nod to so many things that brought them joy when they were younger.
Well, clearly the big one is Frankenstein. I mean, the very title is a play on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus.
Mm.
And then this really just updates the Frankenstein story for a 1950s drive-in cinema kind of feel.
But it's so over the top. It takes that and then just edges it into the comedy zone by being so funny with it. There's one particular conversation that they have with the doctor.
John O'Hurley.
Yeah, and the lightning's going off behind him, but only when he speaks. It's perfect. And it's every time he speaks.
You know the Simpsons rake gag with Sideshow Bob?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it just keeps going and going and going. Or the Family Guy gag where Peter fights the chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it goes until it's not funny anymore, and then it keeps on going, and then you're laughing again.
Yeah.
That's what that lightning gag did. Because it was really 5 minutes of dialogue where every time that someone spoke, they're inside of a giant mansion. Really, they're not anywhere near windows for some of that dialogue, but
no,
there's still lightning inside.
There's still lightning. It's this massive gothic mansion. I love the contrast that they've got in this. It's like, should we push the contrast? Yeah, a bit more, a bit more, a bit more. Darker still. Come on, a bit more. Almost black. There it is. That's what I want.
We should say that the entire episode is in black and white. And what you're describing is what a lot of the old black and white movies did. Have you ever seen Black Sunday?
No.
Black Sunday, I don't think so, no.
It's a very famous German film. It's a vampire movie. And it's so dark in spots that you can't tell what's happening. And X-Files is already guilty of that. So for them just to push it a little bit more in black and white, the writers are making fun of themselves.
They really are.
Speaking of what they're guilty of visually, did you get my thing about what they've done on season one on Netflix?
I saw your email. Now, this is what I'm curious about, though. X-Files was, of course, shot in film. So, I mean, it was before the digital transition. So in order to get 1080p,
yeah,
they would have had to get the original film. This isn't just a transfer from whatever the broadcast was, right?
Oh, no, it's much cleaner than that. They've gone back to the original film.
So it doesn't look as grainy. It doesn't look as crappy. And I mean, obviously not as low def, but
it looks crisp. It looks great.
Is it really easier to tell what's going on? I mean, does that clean up the shadow problem?
A little bit.
Yeah. If it wasn't for the haircuts and the fashion, it feels up to date, really.
If Scully weren't wearing shoulder pads, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
It looks great.
Or just a different shape shoulder pad, you know, because we're there again, but just a different shape now. It's a bit bigger and more pronounced. But that hair.
I assume they're cropping it. I assume they're cropping the image because it's a 4x3 image.
Yeah.
And so if you can do that where you just do a straight 4x3 HD transfer, that's what they did with Star Trek The Next Generation. But you end up with black bars down the side, and it doesn't have that. It is a full 1080p image. So there have been some instances of cropping. I haven't seen anything that's been glaringly horrible, and I don't know the process that they went through to do it either. So it might not be all that bad.
Did you watch this episode in 1080p?
No, it's not. It's only season one.
Only season one at this point. Okay. I was going to say, if this episode were in high def, I'm not sure that it would work. Because the entire premise is that you want the old horror movie feel.
I totally agree with you. I think that some things look better for being in much worse quality. To go back briefly to a show we've done before, I much prefer the standard def episodes of Trailer Park Boys to the high definition ones.
Now, that's an odd one to bring up, though. Why would you say that for Trailer Park Boys? I would assume that with that show, it could only look better.
It might just be a personal attachment for me. When I first discovered that show, I actually got some copies of it off Google Video, which the older ones amongst you in the audience will remember. Not YouTube, Google Video. And they were sort of postage stamp size. You know, they wouldn't fill your iPhone screen today. Mm. And so I kind of got into the show, watching like the first four seasons perhaps, in the worst quality possible. And that just makes me feel much more comfortable watching the earlier episodes in really low quality now. I don't know what that's about. I just prefer them that way. Now they look great. They've got money and they're making them with high def cameras, and it I'm not as happy with it.
You know what I think this episode needs?
What?
I think this episode would really benefit from a summary. Because if people haven't seen this particular one, they might be familiar with the X-Files. Listeners who have watched a good deal of, you know, seasons 1, 2, and 3 might be familiar with who Mulder and Scully are. But this episode is such a departure from what most X-Files episodes do. I think that we should actually kind of walk through it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So Mulder and Scully get called to small town America.
Yeah.
And right away, it's an indictment of small town America. I think a lot of people would be a little bit upset watching this in the Midwest saying, oh, this is what California and New York think of us.
Mm.
It's the Jerry Springer small town America kind of place, isn't it? It's a parody of itself. I mean, we see that everybody there is kind of obsessed with Jerry Springer anyway.
Mm. It feels like the 1950s, and we've seen this comic book page as well. Like, we're in this kind of comic world as well. It's not just the Midwest,
but
it's a comic story.
It does right away present itself as not necessarily being real. because you see some modern things and some things that are solidly stuck in the 1950s. And Lisa asked me right off the bat when I started trying to get her to watch this. She didn't make it through this episode, by the way.
That's such a shame. That's such a shame because this is strong.
But she asked me right off the bat, when is this supposed to be set? Well, they're not doing a very good job keeping continuity.
Right. She can't lose herself in those kinds of things so much.
It has to have a consistency. Right. But I think part of the point of the episode is that it's not real. And I doubt very much that if you asked Chris Carter, he would say that this episode is canon. As a matter of fact, considering the ending, it can't be.
No, this is just, we're going to have some fun. This is a Monster of the Week show. We're going to nod all over the place and we're just going to have a great deal of fun doing it. Because there's all kinds of tips everywhere. Really. This isn't just tips to the old Frankenstein movie either. There's another tip to another film, but I'm not going to mention it yet. We'll get there.
Huh. I wonder which one you're going to say. I have one that I think I saw over and over and over again. But yeah,
I'm curious now. I don't know what it is.
The cold open has some really mysterious shit going on. I mean, that's pretty much the best way to put it. You see a woman going to sleep and some gas in her room knocking her out. And then a big, I don't even know what to call it. It's what, a fumigation tent dropping over the house?
Yeah.
And someone is in the house. And then Mulder and Scully get called in because a woman who had a tubal ligation and shouldn't be able to scientifically get pregnant is with child.
Yeah.
And she's seen him on the Jerry Springer show. Or heard about him on the Jerry Springer show.
What was Mulder doing on the Jerry Springer show, though? That's one thing that I didn't twig to.
He was mentioned on... All right, this is really plot-specific. Hang on, it might be in this Wikipedia page I happen to have open. Mulder and his partner travel to the meet and learn the description of...
I mean, it was very much just one of those episodes where they're like, we got to get Mulder and Scully in here somehow. So just toss some throwaway line about, we saw them on TV.
Yeah, it is specifically mentioned that she's heard about Mulder's expertise in the paranormal from the Jerry Springer show and wants him to investigate. That's all it says on the Wikipedia page. I think he's on there with an alien baby or something.
It was a werewolf baby.
Werewolf baby, that was it. Well done.
Oh, that's right. Because then he says, it wasn't really a werewolf. It was just someone with lycanthropy. It's a real disease. I'm not even sure if I really believe in any of that X-Files stuff anymore. This is one where he was going through his crisis of conscience.
Yeah. He was being rational on the show.
Well, no, there is an end of season episode where something happens to really fuck him up.
Okay.
That might well have been the end. Because this is season 5 beginning, so it might have been the end of season 4. I don't know that for sure.
Okay.
But yeah.
I'll have to check that stuff out because that's the stuff that interests me, you know. I want to know their stuff.
Yeah, there's a cause for his crisis of confidence.
Okay.
We do get to see the monster in the cold open.
Do we, or was it someone in a gas mask?
We don't know, do you?
No, we see the monster with his two faces.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought that it was a lot more ambiguous than that to begin.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think you see the monster. I'm being thrown into doubt now, but I honestly swear you see the monster.
I was pretty sure you were seeing it through the fog of whatever drug was being pumped into the house.
Yeah. Because ever since this aired, it was
a person with a gas mask. That's why I thought that people said it was a person with two mouths because it, you know, the round discs at the front of the mouth of the gas mask.
Two mouths.
Yeah, I know, but even through the fog of gas.
I don't think you ever see the monster with a gas mask on.
You see a person in a gas mask.
It would have been his father, is what we come to find out.
Yeah. You never see the monster with a gas mask on.
You see a man with a gas mask on, though.
Maybe at some point in the episode, but that doesn't mean
I think you should watch that bit again.
I've watched it twice in the last 2 weeks or whatever. I remember you see the monster.
So then there's a good portion of the show, though, where Mulder and Scully are trying to figure out, is there a monster? Isn't there a monster? What is the monster? Is the monster real? Is the monster something that the kids in the neighborhood made up to sell comic books.
Is it Boogeyman in the Woods kind of thing?
Right. Or is it a Scooby-Doo situation where there's someone trying to scare everybody away?
Because this woman's got a kid who draws a comic book with this character called the Great Mutato in it, who's got powers, and it's kind of like he exists, and there's a sort of tacit acceptance that yeah, this Great Mutato, I've seen him. How have you seen him? Is he real?
He is real. Well, this is the thing. Everyone around there's seen him. It's a weird one, this.
I think Lisa was right in a lot of ways, that there are some problems with internal consistency with the episode. But given what we've learned about it at the very end of the episode, that it might or might not be fiction.
I like to think that this episode is totally
hilarious.
Canon. I think you accept that ending happens.
To pull away the curtain, I mean, yeah, that's the big problem with saying that this episode is canon, is that at the end, Mulder breaks the fourth wall. David Duchovny looks at the camera and says, I want to talk to the writers because I want a different ending to this episode.
Does he break the fourth wall?
Well, he says, I want to talk to the writer.
Yeah, and then it goes to the comic kid, doesn't it?
Well, the comic kid comes in, but then it totally changes in tone. Instead of having the bad ending where the monster goes to prison, and rightfully so, all of a sudden it changes where all the pitchfork and torch-wielding civilians that have been hunting the monster the entire time are suddenly singing and dancing all in a concert hall to Cher.
Because he has the speech at the end, and he makes them all feel sorry for him, and then they're all his friend, and they go and see Cher. And Mulder and Scully dance. I don't see what the problem is with that. That's what happens. I'm totally on board with it.
I think that you are clinging to that ending because you want Mulder and Scully to make out and make babies.
But they do in the end anyway.
I like the notion that it's a dual thing, that it is both things.
Oh, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yeah. Why can't it be both things?
Because...
Why can't it be the writer of the show and the writer of the comic? Why can't he refer to both? Why can't it be a fourth wall break and an internal device? I don't know. I like both.
I didn't feel it was a fourth wall break. I know the moment you're referring to. This is art. Art is subjective. It's open to interpretation. If for you it's a fourth wall break, that's as valid as it is for me not being a fourth wall break. But the reality of the situation is you're probably wrong because you're not taking my point of view. But apart from that, I don't really have a solid argument.
On a slightly less, confrontational, because I don't want to come to blows, electronic blows. did you think that the monster was Clint Howard?
Who's Clint Howard? You see, this is what I...
Oh, you mean the doctor?
Oh, did I think it was the doctor?
No.
No.
The Frankenstein wrong? Monster, the guy with the two heads, when the camera got really up close with him, finally, toward the end of the episode, when he's giving his speech about, oh, I just wanted a mate to be friends with, that speech, zoomed in on his face, I thought... absolutely for sure that it was Clint Howard.
Clint
the brother,
Howard, yeah.
The brother of Ron Howard.
Yeah, I've just realized who you meant.
He was in Star Trek, the original series. He was in The Next Gen. He was in Austin Powers. He's that guy who looks just really dumb.
Oh, he's in so much stuff. Just so much stuff.
He's in everything, yeah.
Gentle Ben.
Here, I'm going to Google him real quick. Clint Howard.
Gentle Ben. This kid is friends with a bear.
You can drive a bus through his teeth. Yes.
That's never going to end badly, is it? Yeah, kid, you go be friends with that bear you've met in the woods. That always ends well. I bet he just likes pots of honey and won't eat your face off.
You know what? He looks a lot better as an older gentleman.
He does.
Look at that IMDb photo. His most current photo up there. He looks good. But he's a guy who has made a career out of looking weird and being weird in movies.
Yeah, he's the quirky fella, isn't he? He can be a murderer. He can just be the weird guy who's annoying.
I believe when they were kids, he was considered the cute one.
No.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. And then as they grew up, it just totally switched around by the time Ron Howard was doing Happy Days, and then their lives went the way they've gone. You're right, he does look better, older.
I didn't know he was in Fringe.
Was he apparently in Fringe?
Well, he had a bit part in one episode. Emmanuel Grayson, if that means anything to you. But I know that you're a fan of Fringe.
Yeah, not remembering individual character names yet. I could do with a rewatch, but 228 character acting credits to his name. He's been in nearly everything I've ever seen, surely.
He does a lot of one-off TV appearances, but I mean, he was in Frost Nixon as Lloyd Davis. That was a big movie. He was in Apollo 13.
Mm. He was.
He was briefly in Arrested Development, if memory serves, although I don't see that on this list. Maybe I'm off the deep end. But yeah, he was in everything, and I thought for sure that he was the monster in The X-Files.
Do we know who the monster in The X-Files was?
Yeah, somebody.
Yeah, it's someone who came back as an FBI agent later in the series as a recurring cast member. Let's see. Jeffrey Spender. FBI agent Jeffrey Spender.
Oh, now that name rings a bell.
That Chris name Owens is the actor name.
Chris Owens, yeah.
FBI Special Agent Jeffrey Frank Spender is a fictional character on The X-Files, yada, yada, yada.
Can't
Made his first appearance in the fifth season episode Patient X.
Well, I will get to that and I'll look out for him. But I don't remember.
If you see his picture, you'll know exactly who he is.
Looking for him now, Chris Owens. Oh, yeah. Ah, right. Is he...
He's the son of the cigarette smoker.
Yes, yes, yes. That's who he is. Absolutely. Yeah, I remember now.
Well, no, I'm not going to say that. It could be a spoiler. Isn't he possibly related to someone else?
If someone else is indeed who someone else says that someone else is.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, man, it could be. We don't know. We don't know.
You know, during that scene that I was mentioning where the camera zooms in close on the monster's face.
Yeah.
He explains that, we were just impregnating people just because I wanted to have a mate, a soulmate, someone to relate to. I wanted to have a wife or a partner, a spouse of some kind. We were just raping people to get that end achieved. Did you guys not just bristle at all that? This episode was very forgiving toward rape.
It was. It really was.
Disturbing.
A great deal happened to that woman that was horrible. And there's no getting away from that.
I don't... Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, but in a kind of, it wasn't forgiving to rape in a genuinely forgiving toward rape kind of way. It was more like, because they scrubbed out everything bad the monster had done.
Yes.
By the end of it. That was it. They weren't saying, well, we forgive you for the rape, that's all right. No, it was a fucking monster terrorizing a town for ages. There was the list of charges that would be brought against this creature goes way beyond rape, and they wipe all of it out to take him to see Cher.
Which is why the ending can't possibly be canon. Yeah. Mm. Or real.
And so it's not so much forgiven as conveniently forgotten about and glazed over, and you just dragged along with, we all forgive the monster now.
It's very bizarre.
It's odd. It's very odd.
What's revealed, though, during that speech where the monster's talking about what has been going on for years, and I think that this is the movie reference that you're looking for, Allison, is that for ages they've been conducting these Island of Dr. Moreau experiments on the town folk, and that half of the people in the town are probably animal-human hybrids.
Well, that's what we find out about the fat kid who's writing the comic book, whose lady's dad's the pig, isn't
His
it? That's what's
pig.
Implied at the end.
Yeah.
And the reporter lady with the twitchy neck, she's probably a bird. She's a bird.
Yeah.
She's definitely a bird.
So and the kid with the goatee, created from the sperm of a goat.
Yeah, that's right.
You see how the non-consent element is really just one bit of
the whole town's fucked
tapestry of wrongdoing and morally questionable acts. That it's just
it's a gothic horror that's also a comedy.
Which is quite something to pull off.
Yeah, it really is. It's hilarious.
It's really only this but and it, Young Frankenstein and that do it.
I agree with you. It is the Island of Dr. Moreau, but it's also a third one. It's the Elephant Man too.
Yes.
You know, there's all kinds of threads going through this. It's just fun, isn't it? It's what can we do in one episode? How can we pull all of these things together?
It's been a long time since I've seen The Elephant Man, so help me out. The show that the Frankenstein monster is watching on his television in the basement, was that The Elephant Man?
Yeah.
It was, okay, because I thought I read it somewhere else. I thought Wikipedia was saying it was some other show.
He also watches Freaks, I think.
Is that what else might have been on? Okay.
I think so.
See, that's Let dramaturgy see the right there, you see.
All of these things are built in, you know? Let me see if there's some trivia that backs that crap up.
I really like it when people put the thought of that stuff in there.
It almost makes it so that this episode wouldn't necessarily have even had to have dialogue. They could have gone one step further. They could have done the black and white. They could have gone silent. Yeah, they could have just gone a complete silent movie thing without even title cards or anything.
I have inadvertently learned that a lot of horror would work without dialogue. And that has come from watching horror movies late night on Netflix. And you know how when you put the subtitles on Netflix, it tries its best to remember that you've switched subtitles on. And so as you move from different platforms to play it on and stuff, sometimes they'll stay on, sometimes not. It's not a big deal. But sometimes I find myself watching horror films and it'll get sort of 15, 20 minutes in before I twig, oh yeah, there's no subtitles on. I haven't heard a single word said in this film. And I'm still on board with it.
A lot of that has to do with the format of a horror movie too. And I've been pretty hard on horror movies over the course of several podcasts. I really don't like them because when it comes down to it, there really is a formula. There are certain things that they just rely on. You have to do certain things in order for something to be a horror movie. And sometimes that is lazy unless they find ways to break the rules.
Yeah. Oh, some are horrendous. Most I see are horrendous. That's part of it for me.
I think the postmodern Prometheus is a better horror movie than a lot of horror movies that take $12 or $14 million to make.
Mm. Absolutely. My God, honestly, I've seen some garbage that they wish on their best day they were an X-Files episode.
Back to Mutato and what he's watching. The only reference to what he's watching on IMDb is he's watching 1985's Mask starring Cher. Another nod to her. There's also another reference to Frankenstein, where the monster studied and related to John Milton's Paradise Lost. Mutato here can relate to the boy in the movie.
Do you wonder why they chose Cher music? I was trying to think of something thematically that would tie in with the Frankenstein mythos.
Not that I'm aware of, other than what I've just read on Wikipedia about Cher wanting to be on the show.
She loved the X-Files. She was really upset that she was busy and couldn't do it. But gave a blessing to use the music and be impersonated and what have you.
I read a couple of articles that says she actually turned it down, that she didn't think that it was good for what she wanted to accomplish or the image that she wanted to project. And then she was really recalcitrant about that after the episode aired. She saw it and said, I understand now what they were doing.
Yeah, I don't know where they'd have put her in other than just that bit at the end.
Well, it would have been that bit at the end.
Which I don't think would have been negative for in this. Well, clearly she doesn't think that, having seen it either. You know, that's fair enough.
Mm.
That other part was written for Roseanne Barr as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. The main woman at the center of the pregnancy story. Yeah.
Crazy lady. Yeah.
They clearly drafted in a cheaper Roseanne Barr for that role.
Again, Roseanne Barr reportedly turned that role down.
Such a shame. Right. They would have had such good fun doing it.
I would love to do an X-Files, if anyone out there can hear me.
That might actually be the perfect launching off point for getting back to what we were talking about last week.
What, the guest stars in
the X-Files. Celebrity cameos, as in that MTV article that we were going through calls them.
I have it
Although
here on my tab.
I contend that none of them were actually celebrities at the time.
Right, they've gone on to be famous.
As a matter of fact, John O'Hurley, who is in the postmodern Prometheus, might have been the biggest X-Files celebrity for the time, because this would have been after he was already on Seinfeld, right?
Was he? Is that where I know him from?
Yeah, he was Elaine's boss on Seinfeld.
Right. That you,
Mr. Peterman.
Really not big over here.
Really?
Yeah, really, really not big over here.
Not as big as you reckon at all, no.
Well, that's kind of disappointing.
Kind of a satellite channel kind of occasional thing. People will be aware of it, but no, nobody will have sat and watched all of it, really.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why. I never had a problem with it. With Seinfeld, I quite like it, but yeah, it just never really made it big over here. What number were we up to on the list?
We just done number 20. That brings us up to, right, and that next on the list is Arlie Ermey
from Full Metal Jacket.
Now, he was the drill sergeant.
Wasn't he actually a drill sergeant?
Yes.
Isn't that's how he got on Full Metal Jacket?
Yeah. He's the real-life Sergeant Slaughter, right?
Yeah, and then he's basically just carved out a career shouting at people.
Yeah.
Fair enough. He's ever so good at shouting at people. I would do all the army things if he told me to.
Of course, it makes sense that he'd play a preacher too.
Yeah, it does.
You know, someone who does a lot of shouting.
There's a lot of crossover there, yes, between drill sergeants and preachers.
Definitely.
Really sit, never thought
pray,
of that.
Pray, think, sing, stand, sit, kneel, down, sit, sing, pray.
When it comes to it, the clergy is really the ultimate appeal to authority.
It is.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah, fair enough.
We've been to a Catholic wedding.
No.
It's exhausting, honestly. Because you have three positions that you've got to be in. One is stood uncomfortably, one is sat uncomfortably in a pew that's tilting you forwards 11 degrees, and one is knelt on a cassock that is made out of rock. It's horrible. And you have to do that about 20 times before it's over.
Every time that I go into a Catholic church, which is seldom, but in the course of my job, sometimes I end up going into them to cover various things. Every time the same joke runs through my mind, and it's not even a funny joke, it's just, you know how a lot of people might say, I hope you don't catch fire if you go into a Catholic church. Ha ha ha, you're such a bad boy.
Yeah.
The joke that goes through my head is, I hope that the Catholic church doesn't catch on fire
as
I walk through the door.
Just walk up to the font, dip your finger in the water and go, oh, it's hot. And then just don't say anything.
And then drink all the communion wine.
Yeah. That's what you want to do. Ryan Reynolds was in The X-Files.
He was? As a baby by the looks of it. He's a child.
I think, based on the description that they give of the episode, I think that this was the episode called Eve. It's in season one.
Yes, that looks about right. Ryan Reynolds really pisses me off.
Oh, I think them's his fighting words.
If he's going to look like that, could he have the decency to do it on his own in a small dark room?
Okay, I see where you're coming from. I thought you were going to say that he's a bad actor.
No,
I don't have a problem with his acting. I just wish that...
In the small character category of men, Richard hates because he's jealous of in some way.
I wish he'd fuck off.
You see?
Really?
It's just like, you're too good looking and nice. Just go away.
We're all on a curve here, and he's fucking it up at the top end.
Yeah.
Right, I look worse.
Him and Gosling.
Because Ryan Reynolds
They're
is still
ruining
alive.
Ruining it for everyone else, aren't they?
Yeah, they
That's
are.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, those are the two that always come up on the Atomic Trivia War 9000 when we talk about, like, who would you cast in? Anytime that there's a male lead, Ryan Reynolds or Ryan Gosling.
It's the two Ryans.
If
they
we could
are,
get rid
kings.
Of those two guys, then you and I would look much better.
Think of a superhero movie with a male protagonist who you would not cast Ryan Reynolds as.
I can't.
Nope. He'd make the perfect Flash. He would make a pretty damn good Superman. I could see him as Batman. He could even do, I'm pretty sure he could do a Wolverine. He is Deadpool. He's been the Green Lantern.
So what are we saying?
Yeah.
What are we saying about him?
That we hate him.
He's super,
and
isn't he?
He should go away.
He's super.
And then he's going to make a Deadpool movie, and he's going to make me like him.
That's why he hates him.
Just hates him so much.
You know what really makes me hate Ryan Reynolds? is that I have watched that movie with him and Sandra Bullock where they go to Alaska and fall in love. I have watched that more than once, non-ironically.
Oh.
Why?
Because I like him enough that that movie is palatable somehow in some bizarre, twisted way.
I don't know what to make of you sometimes.
I know. You confuse it's totally uncharacteristic.
Me. You confuse me.
Something's going to have to be done about Ryan Reynolds. I think that's really all there is to it. Something's going to have to be done about him. He was married to Scarlett Johansson and then divorced her.
To be fair, I think she divorced him.
Yeah, right, that's probably okay, more accurate. Enough.
She would divorce me too.
So maybe he has a fault.
Okay. Mm.
Maybe he's human after all.
Does he bleed?
Probably. Maybe he smells. Bleeds. Maybe he smells.
Mountain Dew and hamburgers.
Funyuns.
Yeah.
Do you guys know BD Wong? He's the next one on the list.
I do know BD Wong.
I don't.
But then I'm a human IMDb.
I don't know him. I'm looking at his face and I've not watched a frame of Law and Order, SVU or SUV or
whatever it is. You would have seen BD Wong in the fun 90s movies Jurassic Park and Father of the Bride 1 and 2.
Indeed. You also might know him as Mulan's boyfriend's voice in Disney's Mulan.
Never seen it.
Allison's Disney movie experience is slim to none.
That's fine. You're not really missing that much with that one.
No, okay. Mulan's a bit of a shit one.
Okay.
That was post-Golden Era. So it was one of the first to sort of like, oh, you've lost it. Like, really, they've lost it. Who was the big name in that? Donny Osmond? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The days of the Lion King were long behind at that point.
But in addition to having one of the best names ever, BD Wong.
It's not the best name ever because I don't know whether you know much about UK postcodes, but they start with two letters that represent the nearest postal town.
British Dar.
You aren't going to give our postcode out on a show, are you?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. But for example,
Devonshire.
This is taking a very long time to explain.
Devonshire's a county. Let's say Leeds. Leeds would be LS. Yeah. Right. So that's LS. Bradford is BD, and the center of each city is given the designated number one. So BD one is the center of Bradford, and that's all I can hear when he says his name.
Well, that's pretty funny then.
Yeah, I guess.
Slightly racist. His name is Wong.
But in addition to having one of the greatest names, he is generally likable. I mean, this is a guy who, whenever you see him in something, you're not like, oh God, BD Wong again. This guy's so annoying. He's affable.
If I knew him, I'd have to call him Bradford. I really would.
Still think that's slightly racist.
No, it's not. It's not anything about racist. It's about what his name sounds like. It's phonics. It's humorous. To me, I'm sorry.
Okay. I don't know. I think it's one of the things you're not supposed to do, isn't it? Like, in general, like, if just making fun of how someone's name sounds like.
No.
You've got to be friends with him first, okay? You can't just meet him.
That's what I said. If I knew him, I'd have to call him Bradford.
No, we'd have to be like hanging out friends level.
I don't know him, so I'm not going to. His name's BD Wong. It sounds like the center of Bradford, but I wouldn't call him that. Not to his face.
Call him Mr. Wong.
Yes, I would.
Okay. Lucy Liu's next on the list. Do you remember Lucy Liu? She was a thing in the 90s.
I love Lucy Liu. I would marry Lucy Liu.
She's wee. You'd put her in your pocket when you take it to work.
Is she good looking or not? I can't.
She
I never is. Decided.
She's
I never,
so
never
cute.
Decided.
She is cute.
But a lot of it is also in how she acts.
Right.
She acts like she's a little tiny take charge, but sweet on the inside.
Kick ass, though.
Yeah.
Take no prisoners.
I never got on the Lucy Liu train. Sorry.
Well, climb aboard, buddy.
Turns out lightning high five.
Okay.
They are both in the same episode. I think it might be season 4. Anyway, it's if memory serves, it's one that doesn't actually have like an X-File in it. It just turns out that it's like a Chinese organ trading ring.
Okay.
Pretty grim then, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know who Jesse Ventura is?
Is he a wrestler?
He was once upon a time, yes. And then he got into politics like so many wrestlers do.
Oh, that strikes me as a good career move.
Positive career path.
He's kind of an odd one. Not necessarily a Republican, not necessarily a Democrat, but some sort of a weird fascist in between. I think it was the governor of Minnesota for a while. I'd have to look that up to make sure.
Right.
But he's in Jose Chung.
Okay.
Along with the next one on the list, who is Alex Trebek. They're both in the same episode, starring as Men in Black.
Ah, yes, I remember this now. Again, Alex Trebek, not really known.
We only know his name as the answer to the question, who hosts Jeopardy? That's it.
Alex Trebek is a national treasure, which is saying something since he's Canadian. So for us to have adopted him as the patron saint of knowledge in the United States, that it's a pretty big leap. Mm. He's been on Jeopardy since the 80s. I mean, guy is almost as synonymous with mustaches as Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even though at this point, I think he's probably been without a mustache longer than he actually had one. He shaved it off probably like the late 90s.
And yet but he's still.
Yeah. When you think of Alex Trebek, you think of, you know, well, let me ask you this. Have you gotten the SNL Celebrity Jeopardy skits?
No.
I've seen
You've
a couple.
You've never seen those? Okay.
You saw one on on the birthday show. They did one.
Yeah, sorry, there was. We saw the one that was on their birthday show.
Okay, those are insanely popular over here. Again, our love affair with Alex Trebek. But Will, help me out.
Will Fortune? Will?
No, what? No. Will, what's his goddamn name from, you know, old school and all that?
Will Ferrell.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell is playing a bizarre, twisted version of Alex Trebek.
Right.
In those skits.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we still recognize him, kind of, because he's got the mustache.
I was just looking up Jeopardy over here.
Do you have your own version?
We have had our own version. It looks like it's been attempted on three occasions by three different channels, and no one really went with it. We had Channel 4 from January 83 to July 84, then ITV from September 90 to April 93, then Sky 1 from August 95 to 96.
Right, so no one's lasted more than 2 years.
No one's really gone with it at all.
That's sad. I mean, Jeopardy, of course, for me, as someone who hosts a trivia podcast, Jeopardy was a formative thing. I would very willingly go on the record as saying that I have learned more from watching Jeopardy over the years than I ever learned in high school or reading a textbook or probably even in college. Jeopardy is one of those things where you sit and you watch it, and on the board, let's see, you get, what, six categories with five questions each, two rounds. So you're talking like 60 pieces of trivia per episode plus Final Jeopardy. 61 pieces of trivia per episode.
Yeah.
That are just drilled into your head.
I think Jeopardy's too hard. I think we like our game shows with no thinking involved, ideally with the penalty of falling into water.
We've got...
What, like Deal or No Deal?
we have Deal or No Deal on Channel 4. That's huge. We have... I don't know whether... I don't think it's still on, unfortunately. A couple of intellectual ones. We have Mastermind, which is all about your general knowledge and your specialist subject. So you go on, you declare what you know about.
That's a really hard one.
That's really hard. But then there's a game show called 15 to 1 where 15 people start and they just knock you out. And the level of questions on that show are really tough. You know, if you win that, you're winning a historical artifact, an archaeological piece from an ancient civilization. That's what the prize is.
Yeah, that was. I never got a question right.
I really wanted to go on 15 to 1, but you know what I used to do was pick a number and see how long I'd survive as that person, and then if they got booted off, I'd move to the next one and see if I could still if I was that person. Can I answer your questions? Because it's all right sitting there and getting 4 or 5 out of 15, but if you're not getting one every turn, you're going home.
I just think we like the generation game and shit like that.
That's mass market stuff, isn't it, really? Yeah. How huge is Jeopardy? I mean,
it's huge, isn't it? Every
is it like one of, in terms of the game shows, how big is it?
It is, with Wheel of Fortune, it is one of the two biggest game shows, but that's not saying a lot. I mean, back when the three networks were ruling television, Jeopardy was at the zenith of its popularity, and it was like one of the biggest money makers.
Yeah.
But game shows have really taken a little bit of a tumble here in the last 15 years or so. It is still a staple. No matter where you go in the United States, Jeopardy is still on at either 7 or 7:30 p.m. It's going to be something that's on in, you know, a couple million households every night, I think. But it doesn't quite have the draw power anymore. And for a young audience, it's not really a thing. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I'm an abnormality when it comes to my Jeopardy fandom.
Yeah.
For the 60 and under crowd. Because it really is the 60 and above crowd that are going to tune into Jeopardy. And that's fine.
Fair enough.
It's like Countdown. Do you have Countdown? No, do you have a variety of Countdown?
Don't have Countdown.
That's great.
That one's too hard as well.
Yeah.
That's all. That's
it is
all
marginally too hard for me.
That one, if you win that, you win a set of dictionaries.
If I had my 25 times table nailed, I'd be better, but no, I don't.
Crazy thing. I was always quite good at Millionaire, though. I could do that one.
Oh, sure. Millionaire is just Jeopardy light with too much time between the questions.
Yeah.
The good thing about Jeopardy is that you get a new question every 10 seconds, which is why Who Wants to Be a Millionaire always drove me absolutely fucking insane. Yeah. It's like, hurry up and answer the goddamn question. This isn't this isn't brain surgery, people.
I blame Davina McCall for all of it.
Why?
Right? Because Davina McCall is a British TV presenter. Most prominent. She's been on TV for years. She's brilliant. She's a national treasure, all this. But I think the one thing she's most well known for is presenting Big Brother.
Yeah.
And it was her that invented this television thing of waiting an extremely long time for absolutely no reason to announce the result of something. That was her thing. And
she's
invented
the queen
that,
of making you
that
wait.
That never used to happen on television. And then one day she said, and the next person to be evicted from the Big Brother house is, and then someone caught her attention. And for a good 30 seconds, they kept it. And she forgot what she was doing. And then she said the winner. And everyone said, oh, hang on, you need to do that every week now. And now they say, and the winner is, and then they have an ad break and they put another TV show on and they leave you waiting for it. And
well, it's become even more exacerbated than that. I mean, now the entire format in the United States is, like, for instance, NBC's The Voice. You have one night where everybody performs, and then it's a full 24 hours until the results show so that they can build all that tension. Yeah. Who will win? And then you tune into the hour-long results show, and nothing happens for the first 59 minutes. But in the 60th minute, that's when the announcement comes.
Exactly.
It has become a practice of holding your breath.
Yeah, and Millionaire was an advancement of that theory.
Yeah.
You've given me your answer, but we're going to sit and chat for 10 minutes. We're just going to...
And I'm not going to give you the answer until after the ads.
And so that was Chris Tarrant's fault.
It was.
Those are two bad contributions to the world of television from Great Britain. Sorry.
Sorry.
To the world about that. That was us.
They're ours.
Sorry. But you like Deal or No Deal. That's quite good. That was us as well.
No.
No,
it's terrible.
You do it very differently to us. You have ladies in dresses and things like that. Yeah, it's a completely different show.
Well, you have to have sex appeal.
No, you have to have working class heroism. Yeah. That's what it's about in the UK.
Working class heroism, definitely.
The show is a complete dud, though, because when it comes down to it, you're just pointing at something randomly and saying, okay, open it. It's the hour-long version of a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's an awful game, but,
while ago. It's a lovely chat between Noel and a nice person who deserves nice things. That's what that show is. The first sort of half an hour is introducing you to the person and then telling you exactly why they deserve to walk out of here with £250,000. Everybody does. You love everybody. You want them to have a lovely show. And
then we watch them not walk out of there with £250,000.
But the main word is British loveliness. That's what it's about. It's lovely. That's why it's a massive hit. Everybody can see themselves on it, chatting with Noel and telling him why they deserve it and then choosing you because you're worthy.
Well, in the interest of kind of moving things along, I feel the need to jump to, like, there's a few on this list here that mean nothing to me. Laurie Holden from The Walking Dead. I've never seen an episode, so I don't. That means nothing to me. She could be.
But I've really been enjoying looking at her picture while we've been talking for the last 15 minutes.
She's because a pretty lady.
She has perfect facial bone structure. She is the Robin Wright of her generation. Absolutely perfect Hellenic features.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Richard Belzer from Homicide, Life on the Street, and Law and Order.
Now, he bears talking about. Are you familiar with the crystal ball theory?
What's the crystal
ball? I'm sorry, the snow globe theory, rather.
No.
Okay, so there's a soap opera, and I can't remember which one it was. But when it went off the air, the very final episode revealed that the entire soap opera and everything that had ever happened on it had been basically the hallucination of an autistic child.
Wow.
Right.
Who was holding in the final shot, I believe it was. And I'm not really intimately familiar with this, so I'm sorry if I'm screwing it up. I probably am. But I think one of the final shots was the autistic boy holding a snow globe in his hand. And so there's this, it's not really a theory. It's not even a hypothesis. It's just kind of a fun mental game to play that anything that ever happened or appeared on that show in any measure was some sort of a metafiction. It's erased. It can't be canon. It can't be taken seriously. Richard Belzer, whose character Detective Munch started on Homicide, Life in the Street, he appeared on that soap opera. So he can't be real, which means that Homicide can't be real. It's Homicide is also the delusional imaginings of this autistic child. Munch's character is famous for then continuing over the same exact character to Law and Order SVU. So Law and Order
the same character.
The same character. He holds the record, I believe, the Guinness World Record for being the same character on the most TV shows.
That's which crazy.
Which is how this thing all plays out.
Yeah.
It means that Law and Order SVU was also the imagining of the autistic child. It also crossed over to the X-Files, where he was still Detective Munch, the same character, which means the X-Files is also the imaginings of the autistic child from this soap opera.
Okay.
How has this been allowed to happen on American television?
The X-Files crossed over with Cops, which means that Cops is also in the snow globe.
But Cops is a reality show, so...
Which means that the whole world is nothing
is a
more.
Snowball.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Indeed.
Oh my God.
All-encompassing philosophy. I'm going to real quick Google here just to make sure I'm not... Snow globe theory.
That has shattered my beliefs in existence and all kinds of things. Now I know why we're here.
Saint Elsewhere, I believe.
Saint Elsewhere, yeah.
I think Saint Elsewhere was the soap opera.
Right. I'm familiar with Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah. Wow. He shouldn't have been allowed to do that. He's some weird thing going through reality, canceling it out.
That's writers doing that.
Writers shouldn't
be
allowed
to do that. That's writers having secret fun with each other along the lines.
See, I actually thought that Jonathan Frakes held the record for playing the same character in the most number of TV shows.
Let's see. John Munch. John Munch is a fictional character played by actor Richard Belzer. La 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 la. Continue amongst yourselves. It might take a moment to find.
I'm looking up Jonathan Frakes doing the same thing.
I'm going to look up who is...
Yeah, the character who holds the record for appearing on the most TV shows, Richard Belzer. Seeing it multiple references.
Okay. No, I believe you. I just thought... I actually thought it was Jonathan Frakes.
Well, he would have been in... Star Trek The Next Generation, and then cross over to DS9. He was also on Voyager, but where else would he have gone as...
He was also in Enterprise.
Okay.
The last episode of Enterprise was a Next Generation episode and took place on the holodeck of the Enterprise.
Wasn't that the same exact thing that happened at the end of Voyager?
No. No. I don't really remember the end of Voyager. In the same way I don't remember the car accident.
Maybe I'm getting things confused.
Yeah. No, the last episode of Enterprise was sort of Commander Riker and Counselor Troi on the holodeck of the Enterprise looking back over the final mission of the original Enterprise crew. So technically, he was in Enterprise as well. So I think that was something like 5. And so I thought that was the most.
He played Munch for longer than Marshall Matt Dillon in Gunsmoke and Fraser Crane in both Cheers and Fraser. He lasted over 20 seasons on telly.
Must
as
fuck
the
you
same
up.
Character.
Must fuck you up. I don't accept
that
it that doesn't
guy?
Fuck you up.
Well, it's like the soap opera stars in the UK, you know, the ones who've been on Coronation Street since the fucking 50s.
Yeah, and I think
like,
they're messed up
people.
How could
you not be who you are anymore? Like, you've got it's to weird. Have lost yourself along the way.
Were there others on that list that you desperately needed to touch on?
Not really.
I mean, you can, like, Luke Wilson shows up.
Yeah.
And Patrick Renn is the kid from The Sandlot. And Ed Asner's on an episode.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, as an ugly little kid who turned into a big shit.
I've just read here that Munch makes a cameo appearance on the 5th season episode of The Wire.
So that's not real either.
Munch can be seen at Kavanaugh's bar arguing with the bartender over his tab. He appears in Unusual Suspects. Yes.
Bizarre. Womp, womp, womp.
Sci-fi fantasy film about a fictional character traveling throughout all of fiction, wiping it out of existence. Somebody make that film. Somebody, honestly, even animate it. I'll watch that. That's cool.
That's Gary Shandling, Taya Leone, Minnie Driver, David Alan Greer, Kathy Griffin, Danny Trejo, Adam Baldwin. Lucy Lawless.
Danny Trejo's only recently become famous. I think it was around the Machete time.
It
maybe
was, yeah. a bit.
Just
a bit
like
earlier.
We learned what his name was and decided he looked tough.
Now, he hasn't been playing the same character as Munch, but he has been playing the same basic character type for the past 40 years. And well deservedly, too. I mean, guy's awesome in what he's in.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Lucy Lawless, there she is.
Cary Elwes, Bryan Cranston, Dean Norris, Aaron Paul. I mean, basically the entire cast of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the list goes on. But are we going to talk more about X-Files next week, or are we done?
It's up to you, Jason. This is yours.
I don't know what else we can say without... I think we've reached a point where we could nicely summarize the X-Files.
Yes. I think that we have said an awful lot, and really the only room that there might be still to talk a little bit would be the finale, but I'm not sure we would want to ruin that for people.
Mm. Yeah. I think if you've already... My summary of the X-Files is this. If you've already seen it, go and watch it again. It's on Netflix in the US, and It really stands up. It's brilliant television. And if you've already watched through everything new that's come out, you've binged on House of Cards and whatever, it's a couple of weeks until Orange is the New Black comes out, go and fill that time with The X-Files. It's well worth it. If you've never seen The X-Files, you really must go and watch them now, really. Mm. Take a few days off work. go and watch all of them. I also want to say... Stick with it after David Duchovny leaves. Watch all of it. It doesn't drop off. It doesn't get worse. Robert Patrick's brilliant in it.
That was my biggest stumbling block, though, is I hate when people leave shows. I've spent so much time investing in these characters,
stay
and then they leave.
It. Stay with it.
I will trust you.
Honestly, stay with it. There's some great moments in the Robert Patrick episodes. Obviously, they're not all brilliant, because there's loads of them, but... You know, I enjoyed sticking with it. The movies are a separate issue. the first ones you kind of need to see because it fills in plot gaps, I think, between seasons 4 and 5 or 5 and 6.
Hmm.
Somewhere in the middle there.
I will watch them, I promise. I will.
The second movie, not so important, but it was all right. But yeah. Do you know what? It's another one of those weird things. Part of the evil plot involves an experiment that involves dogs. And based on that alone, I just have trouble watching the film. Even though no dogs are harmed in the production of that film. That is not a main theme of the film. They're not even like nice friendly dogs that you see being happy first or anything. They're like evil Russian German shepherd dogs, whatever. So.
But I had one of those and it was quite mean.
Well, but
it wasn't evil,
you know, and it's a weird thing, like they're putting like dog heads on human bodies. So you kind of think, hey, if it works out, then the dog's got a human body and can pick shit up and stuff. Maybe that's good for the dog.
Yeah.
Oh, but, no, it's the old mermaid conundrum. Do you get the mermaid with the fish on the bottom or the mermaid with the fish on the top?
It depends what you want to do with the mermaid.
Yeah, that's always the mermaid problem.
You know,
I think I'd still go with the top, you know.
The problem is everybody seems to want to shag the mermaid.
I'd rather talk to her.
Well, then that's why you go with the top
half.
You can't really
have a conversation with a fish head, can you?
Is it a talking... No, I'm not getting into
anyway,
this.
Anyway, yeah, let's...
So that's where I am with the X-Files. It's one of the all-time greats of television. If you live your life never having seen the X-Files, you have missed out on part of the human experience. It's just a cultural phenomenon that you would do well and benefit from to take in. And it will just entertain you. There.
Oh, it's so good.
See what it does to Jason. Look at that.
Even Mrs. Jason likes it. If you think that you won't watch The X-Files, if you think that you won't like it, remember, my wife likes The X-Files.
Except this episode tonight that we've been talking about.
Because it's too weird.
It's too silly.
It is weird.
It's too weird.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that that's good for The X-Files.
Yeah.
That's a good place to end it.
I hope we've encouraged some people to watch it. I really do. I think we will have done. Our work here is done.
Yes.
And now we must decide what happens next. Whose turn is it,
Richard,
by the way?
It's over to you.
It's not my turn, is it?
Yeah.
Did Jason pick the X-Files?
Yeah. Oh, did you? Oh, is it your turn, Jason? I don't know.
Well, I kind of feel guilty about not passing it back to Allison. Because, Rich, you and I, we kind of browbeat her into a lot of X-Files episodes.
Do you know what? I'm with you on that. I see. I'm with you. Let's let Allison pick one.
Okay. Can I have some thinking time? I need to go to bed and I can't
we'll,
immediately
we'll come
pluck
back to
one
it.
Out
we always end episodes so, with let's not decide with what we're doing next and then we'll think about it. That's the closing moments for this show.
I've got 3.5 hours sleep if I go to bed immediately.
Right. Well, so we'll end the show. Thank you for listening, everybody. Don't forget, check out our old shows. They're there on SoundCloud or on our website at simplysyndicated.com. There's loads of them we've done, you know, of this show. Go and listen to them. And we'll be back later with more shows when we've decided what the next show we're going to do is on the next show. So, bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.